We're going to talk about forgiveness today. Oh, we talk about forgiveness a lot, but we're going to start today with the fact that we have a lack of understanding when we say the word forgiveness. So the first misunderstanding that sometimes we get in the back of our head is forgiveness is just God overlooking my sin. You know, it's no big deal, right? It's okay. The problem is when we get that kind of an attitude and that kind of an understanding, if God doesn't consider my sin a big deal, why should I, right? It's just something everybody does. The second misunderstanding we get is views forgiveness as the spiritual equivalent of somebody paying off your debt. You know what that picture looks like, maybe. It makes God look like the rich old uncle that every time you run up your credit card bills and somebody's hunting for you, they swoop in to pay off your debt. Okay, I don't have a rich old uncle that does that for me. But we understand somebody else paid the debt. And while that is true, that view is extremely incomplete. And then that third misunderstanding that we get is really about who God is. See, we view forgiveness this way. God forgives the debt, but then for the rest of your life, he's never going to let you forget about it. He's going to drill at you and drill at you like a drill sergeant. He's going to make your life miserable until you finally do things his way. We see God as somebody that is just mad because he had to do what he had to do. And the thing is, the first view, again, misunderstands the nature of sin, thinking that it doesn't actually need to be removed. The second misunderstanding, well, this gets just a little bit more complex because it begins to understand that we don't realize the scope of what forgiveness means. It is more than just the removal of a stain. We have furniture in our house, and we've had kids that grew up in our house, and you know what's on our furniture? If you look at it hard enough, little chocolate stains, little grape stains, little things that happen to your furniture over the years. If you have grandkids, it's amazing. When you're the parent, the stains are never okay. When you're the grandparent, oh, that's okay, honey. It'll be okay. I don't ever remember my mom saying that was okay when I stained her furniture, not once in my lifetime. But we don't see it as something that needs to be dealt with. It's just a stain. It's a lot deeper than a stain. It's something that we have to dig into our lives and begin to understand that sin has to be dealt with. And, of course, that third understanding, it changes the very nature of God. Because we see God as the big bad person, even when he's pulling us out of our sin. So today, as we continue our walk through the book of Psalms, which is a song book, we're going to stop and we're going to talk about what sin does to us, because eventually what happens is we decide because of our sin we have to hide, don't we? So today, we're going to try to come out of hiding just a little bit. You see, we try to hide our sin from others and from God because he's just a spiritual bully, right? I mean, he just doesn't want me doing the things that, well, I want to do. We hide it because we think we can handle my sin. Have you ever gotten that in your head before? God, I got this. Yeah, I know what I'm doing is sin. I know what I'm doing is wrong. But you do understand I can handle it. Here's the amazing thing about handling sin. You can handle it till you can't. And when you can't, you can't. Even though we convince ourselves. We try to hide our sin because we don't want to stop, right? I mean, I've got things in my life I'm struggling with. I've got sin that honestly, I'm in love with it. And if I take it to God and try to get forgiveness for it, then the first thing God's going to say is, well, how do we get you to stop? And since I don't want to stop, I want to keep doing it, then I just want God to, again, just kind of overlook it. But you know what? What we're really worried about is we're worried that God will find out, and then what he's going to do to us when he finds out. You ever see that old television show, Father Knows Best? You know, there was another cartoon that wasn't so popular. It was actually a primetime cartoon that didn't last that long. It didn't last but a few episodes. It was called Wait Till Your Father Gets Home. And that's kind of how we see God a lot of times. Someday God's going to show up, and yeah, I realize someday I'm going to have to explain all this because I'm going to get caught. But until he shows up, let's just keep sin a little hidden. So today we're going to turn to Psalm 32. So if you want to grab the Bible out of the pew rack, if you brought one with you, you can follow along. And we're going to talk about seeking forgiveness, but in the process, finding life. This psalm is a celebration of God who loves us enough to rescue us from the destructive power of our sin and who longs for us to run towards him when we fall and we stumble. So when we start talking about forgiveness, usually we start to talk about all the bad things that go with sin. So let's start on the other side. Let's talk about the joy of forgiveness. I'm in verses 1 and 2. Blessed is the one whose transgressions are forgiven, whose sins are covered. Blessed is the one whose sin the Lord does not count against them, and whose spirit is no deceit. So as you look at those verses, I want to call your attention to the words God uses for sin. He calls them transgression, which is actually outright open rebellion to what God said. This is literally you thumbing your nose at God. Yes, God, I know you said it, but you know what? It doesn't matter to me. I'm going to do it the way that I want to do it. We see the word sin. And you see that word a lot in the Bible. You know there are many words that we translate to the word sin. The word that is translated here actually means turning aside from the right path. So the word sin here is more like you've made a bad choice. All the way back to the Garden of Eden, right? There they are. They're standing there. They've got no clothes on. They're looking at the tree. They're saying, man, that looks kind of good to eat. And they reach and they take. Understand at that point, they aren't necessarily just throwing God away. They're just saying, I'm making a choice. I'm turning my way this time. And then the third word that we get there to describe sin is the word iniquity. And that's a great big churchy word that really isn't that churchy at all. It simply means a distortion or deviation from the will of God. So it doesn't mean that you outright did something that was necessarily wrong. It's just that you're looking at your life and you're saying, you know, God, I know your path turns right, but you know what? I really want to go try left for a little while. And so what you then try to do is instead of walking away from God, you try to make God fit into your path. That's what iniquity is. You've turned your way and you didn't abandon God, but what you're really trying to do is you're trying to drag God down your path instead of following his path. And these three words are important, but understand they all come down to one thing. Sin is all about disobedience. So when we look at the word sin, it isn't that, oops, I made a mistake. I just want to let you know something. There is no such thing as a sin that was a mistake. If it was a sin that was not a mistake, that was just a mistake, then you really didn't sin because you didn't know that it was supposed to be sin. It was just a mistake. It was an accident. These three words tell us that sin is not an accident. These are things you decided in your life that you wanted. They're your choices, your decisions, your path. And that makes them yours to deal with. Because it's all about disobedience. I got a lot of things on my path that fit as disobedience. Which is why I'm more in love with the way the verse describes how God handles my sin. Because he's not the big bad bully. No, God uses some words for sin that include the word forgiveness. This is what it says about forgiveness. It comes from the Hebrew word that means carried. Okay? So when you say I've been forgiven, here's literally what happened. Somebody came along and you were crushed under your burden and they reached down and they took the burden and they lifted it off of you and said, let me take this. And they started carrying the burden. That is what forgiveness really is. It isn't that God just closed his eyes to it or patted you on the head and said, it's okay, you'll do better next time. No, what Jesus did, and there's a very part of his story, the crucifixion story, where somebody had to carry the cross of Jesus. You understand, maybe somebody had to carry the cross of Jesus because Jesus had already reached down and he was carrying yours. That's what forgiveness is all about. There is this word that's used there that talks about being covered, which means it's hidden out of sight. It's still there. It didn't go anywhere. But God has covered it, which means he doesn't see it anymore. When you've been forgiven and God looks at your life, God doesn't see your sin. He sees you. I don't know if I like that. I mean, because sometimes I like to hide behind my sin, don't I? But he says, I've got it covered. I took care of it. Well, how do you cover sin, God? It's really simple. Gary laid it out in the communion meditation. He covered it with his blood. He covered it with his sacrifice. He said, I've got it covered. And since I've got it all covered, I don't count it against you. The psalmist must have had some accounting background because this was an accounting term that he's using. He's basically saying, understand, the stuff is still there, but it's not going to be counted against you. When I start going through your ledger and I turn the pages and I get to your page for the word forgiven, the pages are going to be blood red. They're not counted against you. The debt has been forgiven. But here's what you need to remember. We miss this about forgiving. I don't care who it is or what is being forgiven. We need to understand it's never free. You're saying I have to earn my salvation? Absolutely not. Forgiveness is never free. But it is the person that is doing the forgiven that has to pay the price. If you're the one receiving forgiveness, it's going to feel very free to you. It's going to be very liberating to you. But you do understand, for somebody to forgive you, even if it's human to human, it's never free. It will cost them something. Maybe they'll have to learn to live with something that was done to them. Maybe every time they look at you, they're still going to feel that pain. But they know, I forgave them. So they have to turn aside from it. Forgiveness isn't free, folks, and we need to understand what God did for us. And that brings an interesting question. Why? I mean, he's the creator of the universe. He can say, let there be, and there is. Why on earth would God forgive me? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, he's God. If he doesn't like me, and he doesn't like the way that I'm doing things, he can just squash me like an ant, rake me to the side, and say, fine, I'll just make a new one, let there be. And that's where we really have to start dealing with the idea of forgiveness. Because we need to understand, he desires to forgive because he desires us to be free from the burden, the stain, and the debt of sin. Okay. He desires that for my life. He wants something for my life, not from my life. Yeah. That's the nature of forgiveness. If you have kids, and you've ever had kids that have done anything wrong, which if you've had kids, then they all do something wrong, and you've ever had to pay a price for something your kid does wrong, and as bad as you want to, you have to go home and basically live with your kid. You understand a little bit about this because you can't live angry. Because when you look at your kid, I love you. You're part of me. You came from me. So I love you. Now, unfortunately, this thing that we get into, because we don't want God to have to love us so much, we decide to hide our sin. And as the psalmist continues in verses 3 and 4, he tells us the dangers of hiding our sins. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of a summer day. The psalmist knows firsthand freedom, the freedom of forgiveness. Because he felt the burden trying to conceal the sin. Kind of wish I had been preaching this sermon about 3 or 4 weeks ago because we could have done an object lesson. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, y'all remember what the temperature was like around here? You walk outside to go from your door to the car, you feel like you need to go back inside and take a shower. You know, you feel like you literally can see the air that you're breathing. It's so heavy. You know, you go outside, you're like, oh, I'm going back inside where the air conditioner is. This is unbearable. It's gotten a little better now. It's gotten a little cooler, not quite as humid. But you know, if you've been forced to go outside and work in the heat of the day, it's a tiring thing, isn't it? Man, your clothes get all sweaty, and you don't think there's going to be enough water or soap around to get it all off of you. And you just get that grimy feeling, and then you come back in, and you don't even want to sit in a chair because you know what? Yuck. That's what the psalmist says trying to conceal your sin is like. It's like you've been outside digging in the dirt on a hot summer's day. Then they refer to that time when they refused to acknowledge their sin before God. Yeah, God, I was sinning, but I kept silent. I didn't want to come to you and acknowledge what I was doing, so I just kept my mouth shut, hoping that if I kept my mouth shut long enough, it would just get all better. But it didn't work that way. Because then the psalmist, in very vivid terms, talks about how that sin, it ate him up. Did you catch the phrases he used? Bones wasted away. Strength sapped. No peace, groaning all day long. I have never personally had to deal with cancer in my body. I have been a cancer coach for a person. And that's what it's talking about. You're alive, but every single day you get up, you know there's just something inside of you that is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. There's no peace. There's no rest. You feel sick, even to the point that your bones hurt. That's the imagery that the psalmist is painting here. Your spiritual well-being is full of cancer because you've got sin that you're not willing to deal with. And here's the thing. Sometimes we need to fully realize why God hates sin. Sometimes we think God has these laws out there and he's got like a dartboard of thou shalt not. Hey, this one, let's say, yeah, I think that's a very good thou shalt not. It's kind of arbitrary. It's designed to, so that I can't have any fun. You know, it's supposed to be boring. We need to realize that God doesn't hate sin because he hates us. That's a big one. God does hate sin, but he doesn't hate us. Now, we have this thing that we like to say as people. We're supposed to love the sinner but hate the sin. I just want to let you know something. I'm a human. I have a hard time doing that because I tie them all together. I see the person. I see the sin. And what you use to get out of me is judgment. God doesn't work like me. He's not human. So he is fully capable of hating sin but loving the person in sin. He also doesn't have some arbitrary, random set of rules. Okay, this isn't like sin bingo, where God rolls around and whatever ball comes out, that's what he's going to call a sin. Nope. He hates sin because he loves us. Romans chapter 6:23 says, "For the wages of sin is death." And now, folks, you need to understand, death is what sin pays. All the way back in the Garden of Eden, what did God promise Adam? The day you eat of the fruit, you shall surely die. Adam ate of the fruit. Did Adam die? Not physically. He lived for another 900 years. But spiritually, the moment it went into his mouth and he swallowed, the Bible says, oh my gosh, he realized he was naked. He had always been naked. But now he understood his innocence was gone because something inside of him died. When we engage in sin, we receive death. Death is not an arbitrary or external punishment from God on our sin. Death, quite frankly, is sin's logical conclusion. And that, my friends, is why God hates it. That is why God pours his wrath out on it. That is why he wants to separate from us, separate it from us. And that is why we need to understand the freedom of confession. I'm in verses 5 through 7. Then I acknowledge my sin to you, and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Therefore, let all the faithful pray to you while you may be found. Surely the rising of the mighty waters will reach them. You are my hiding place. You will protect me from trouble and surround me with songs of deliverance. In our sin, we hid because we know we're in trouble. Right? When you've done something, you know trouble is going to come. And we need to understand we run from the one who is eager to deliver us from our sin. We're going one way because God is the other way. We need to understand we run again because we like our sin. We like it. I don't want to give it up, God. If I come back to you, I have to let go of it. But we also run because, well, we are worried what he might do to us in his anger. When you're living in sin, I just want to let you know something. God looks like a very angry God. He does, folks. When you're living and struggling with your sin, God looks like the worst being in the universe because you think he's coming to get you. He's the boogeyman in the middle of the night. Because, again, you're dealing and you're struggling with your sin, not with God. Then the psalmist finally stops running. He says, I'm done. I'm tired. I've ran all I can run. I'm out of breath. I'm out of time. I'm out of energy. I'm tired of it. And then he turns to this idea of forgiveness. And well, instead of anger, he's amazed. He finds love. Instead of burden, he finds rest. When's the last time you had a really good rest? Gary and I were talking about this morning. Seriously, when's the last time you had a really good rest? Even when I'm trying to sit still and rest, I've got things I got to go do. Because life is nothing but a bunch of work, right? He says, nope, I've got some rest for you. Instead of destruction, they find deliverance. He realizes that God is a hiding place, a safe place to run in times of trouble. But not until he decides to seek forgiveness. God preserves us and delivers us, and even from ourselves, especially from ourselves. I am the biggest problem in my sin. I don't necessarily need to be delivered from my sin as much as I need to be delivered from myself. Because myself is what keeps chasing these things that I know exactly where it's going to end. It is worth noting that hiding from God is it's a pointless activity. It absolutely is. He knows us better than we know ourselves. After all, he created you. You're still learning about yourself, aren't you? He knows everything about you. That's why in the New Testament, the Greek word for confession means to agree. This is important. Because a lot of times, I think I'm coming to God and I am telling God what I did wrong. You do understand. That's silly because God understands what you need to wrong, right? Because he knows everything. He was watching while you did it, even if you had the door locked and the lights out. Okay? God still saw exactly what you did. And so what happens when we confess is we are simply agreeing with him about what it is. That changes my model of forgiveness completely. It changes my idea of confession completely. Because I am now looking at God and say, God, you're right. It was sin. It was sin all along. You're not telling God anything new. You are now bending your will to say, yeah, I see things your way, God. And when we do that, we are finally in the place to see him transform us by removing it from our lives. And you have to appreciate that. Until you're really willing to confess it, until you're willing to agree with God that it is sin, there is nothing he can do about it. Because if he did something about it before you confessed, he's violating your free will, right? And he says, I'm not going to do that. If he was going to do that, he may as well have done that back at the tree, right? And when Adam and Eve reached for it, just caused the tree to explode and say, no, 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 you're not. Did you not listen to my instruction? No, he let them follow their own hearts, knowing that the only way that they could love him back is to turn back toward him. Yeah, I know it's really small, but we're going to talk about the promise of guidance. So when I turn back to God, what do I get? So hopefully you pulled your copy out and you can read along with me. I will instruct you and teach you in the way you should go. I will counsel you with my loving eye on you. Do not be like the horse or the mule, which have no understanding, but must be controlled by a bit and bridle, or they will not come to you. Many are the woes of the wicked, but the Lord's unfailing love surrounds the one who trusts in him. Rejoice in the Lord and be glad in your righteousness, seeing all you who are who have an upright heart. Here's the thing. Sometimes we treat forgiveness as the sum of the gospel message. Okay? And this is an important part of it. Sometimes we treat it like it is the end result of Christianity. Woohoo! God forgave me! Woohoo! I am free! So I'm free to do what? Go right back out and do the same thing I was doing, right? Because I can always come back and just ask for some more forgiveness. So back and forth I come. I sin, I come back, I forgive, I get forgiveness, I go back and I sin, and we create this endless treadmill. And we call that Christianity, folks. Forgiveness isn't the end, it's the beginning of your journey. Forgiveness was not the goal of Jesus' mission. That was restoration. God doesn't just save you from sin. I love the statement. He saves you for something else. Wow, okay. So the purpose of me confessing my sin and receiving forgiveness isn't just so I can receive forgiveness. No. The purpose was because God had a plan for you. He's more than the guy snatching you out of the burning wreck you made of your life. He has a place for you in his kingdom, a place where you will find joy, purpose, fulfillment, and, well, all those things that you're currently trying to find all by yourself. You see, deliverance from sin is the point where real life begins. Verse 8 says, I will instruct you and teach you the way you should go. This is important because we need to remember that God got us off of the path that was headed for destruction, and now he's given us a new path, and he's going to guide you on the path that leads to him. Wow. Now, there's two ways you can walk this path. I love the psalmist because he gives you a choice here. So here's how you can walk the path. You can either do it like a father-son relationship, okay? You can do it like, I will teach you, and I'll teach you and you listen. You know, I'll show you the way to go. I'll instruct you, and you and I will walk this side by side. Or, here's your choice too, you can do it the stubborn mule side, which means what you're asking God to do is put a bridle around you and a bit in your mouth and drag you down this path. Step by step. The entire way, you pulling back against God. Those are how you can try to walk your path of forgiveness. Which one sounds easier? You do realize when you're playing tug of war on that rope, God always wins, right? He's got eternity on his side. I don't. Now, please know, as you're going down this path, whether you choose the father-son relationship or you choose the stubborn mule relationship, you're going to slip and fall. You're going to have those days where sin is just going to run you over like a steamroller. And here's the thing. That's okay. Just don't be okay with it. Let me say that again. It's okay that you have a day where sin just kicks your teeth in, but just don't be okay with it. You see, we need to understand God is leading us. The loving kindness of the Lord shall surround him. So basically, God has formed the wagons around you. He's like, yeah, you're having a bad day? That's okay, because guess what? I've got unlimited resources, and he's going to surround your life. But again, only if you let him. Only if you allow him to do the things that he needs to do in your life. And that means we have to seek forgiveness. So I like cop shows. Law and Order, I got addicted for it for a while. 20 seasons, I think I've watched every episode at least 5 or 6 times. Don't care that so much for the new one, but the old ones, I get in. Here's the question. Why do the people from TV shows or movies or even real life, why do they run when they commit a crime? Well, the answer is simple. They know they've done something wrong, right? Innocent people don't usually take off running. I know, I was scared, which you might. Innocent people don't take off running. But when you've committed a crime, or in this case a sin, you know you've done something wrong. You're dealing with guilt. We tell ourselves in our running, I'm okay, you're okay, we're okay. But let's be realistic, none of us are okay. None of us are okay with the way we're living in sin. If you were okay with the way you were living in sin, you would not be here this morning. There are thousands of other places you could be that were probably more fun than what you're doing right now. But for some reason, you see value in what you're doing because you understand there's something in your life that is not okay that you can't solve on the golf course or the baseball field or working or whatever it is you had planned to do. You get, I got to get something fixed because there's something inside of me that's growing and broken. And well, that's what the psalmist is teaching us. We should not run from God. We should run to him. What we fear God will do to us is what sin is already doing to your life. We're fearing consequences that we're already experiencing. We're afraid at the very worst God's going to kill me for what I did. And God says, guess what? Your sin has already done that for you. That brings us all the way back to where we started. The psalmist desires that we seek forgiveness. And in that forgiveness, we don't just feel like, got away with another one. He says, hey, seek forgiveness, find life.